Welcome to All Things New Orleans, the weekly show on what people are talking about around our city. I'm your host, Eve Tro. Jack Hopke is away. A year ago this week, the city of New Orleans was reeling from a violent act. At a second line on Mother's Day, shots were fired into the crowd. 19 people caught bullets. One person was trampled in the chaos. Today on All Things New Orleans, we explore some issues brought about by the Mother's Day shooting. We hear how people's thoughts about safety might have changed. The district attorney explains a new approach to prosecuting violent crime. And a mother who lost her son to violence describes why she still second lines. One person injured by the gunfire last Mother's Day was Mark Hertzgard. A journalist and author based in San Francisco, he's written about New Orleans quite a bit over the years, including post-Katrina reporting and the BP oil spill. Mark happened to be in town, a rare visit just for pleasure, on Mother's Day last year. He was supposed to catch a plane back to California that day and came out to the second line as a last stop on his way to the airport. I asked Mark Hertzgard what happened that afternoon.
I happened to choose of the three brass bands. I was with the final one, and of course that was where the shots rang out. And I just by chance happened to be only about 8 or 10 feet from the shooter, and I could hear that pop, 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 pop. And then, like everyone else, I threw myself to the ground, and all the shouting started.
And then from there, you realized that you had in fact been hit.
You know, at first I didn't think I had been. I did see the blood, but I thought, oh, I just cut myself as I was throwing myself down on some sharp rock or some glass. But no, I was struck in the leg, and a good Samaritan came by right afterwards and wrapped it up for me. And of course, by then I could see right across the intersection somebody else who was clearly in very deep trouble, lying face down on the pavement. Afterwards, I was taken to the hospital along with the others and got taken care of.
Did you see the video of the shooting that came out that was retrieved from a crime camera that happened to be operating in the area? And what did you think when you saw that event again?
Yes, of course, I've watched that video many times. It's pretty sobering. Because I can see myself on there, and I'm that middle-aged white guy who is by far the slowest getting out of the way. And it's pretty sobering to see how close I came to getting, a very different outcome. And I'm also very aware that the other journalist who was there that day, Deborah Cotton, that she suffered much, much worse than any of the rest of us. And I'm just very grateful that she's alive today and back functioning.
What's your experience been in the past year with law enforcement and the legal system in New Orleans?
I have not had a great deal of interaction with them. I was, interviewed once by phone, and I was in contact with the crime reporter at the Times-Picayune, Helen Freund, who would occasionally bring me up to date on what was going on. And that was how I learned that all of the attempted murder charges were dropped in the case earlier this spring, which I found stunning. And I had a chance at Jazz Fest to question Mayor Landrieu about that. And in fact, when I asked Mayor Landrieu about that, after graciously saying, "I'm sorry about what happened to you," he went on to say, "Look, I just want you to know that our murder rate has been cut in half in the city over the last year, and that's partly because we think we're doing a smarter job now of going after these kinds of incidents. And in particular, in this case, although it sounds, as he put it, counterintuitive to give up those attempted murder charges, we believe that filing the federal charges gives us a better chance to put those guys away for a longer period of time."
Was that answer satisfactory to you?
I respect that there are times in the police process and in the judicial process that these kinds of deals can be made. And it's very possible that there's other information that I'm not aware of that hasn't come out yet. But with those caveats, I still feel surprised and, frankly, disappointed that the attempted murder charges have been dropped. Those suspects, if they're convicted in the trial that is scheduled to begin this summer, they could end up in life in prison. But if they do go to jail, it won't be because they, sprayed gunfire into a peaceful crowd of people who happen to be celebrating Mother's Day with one of the sacred rituals of New Orleans. It will be because of these other allegations about, heroin and cocaine and guns. And no, I still don't. I'm not personally persuaded by that.
I wonder how your thoughts and emotions about this whole event have evolved over the past year.
I was surprised by how they evolved. At the time, literally from the moment it happened, I didn't think I'd been hit. I thought, it was a small thing, and it certainly was relatively small compared to other people there. And I didn't have a great deal of interruption of my life. And yet, now as the one-year anniversary comes, and as I've done more reporting on the backstory of what happened that day and seen that video especially, I've gone back and forth. I can't really decide, was I really lucky that day or really unlucky? Obviously, I was unlucky to be in that place, but I was very lucky to come through that relatively unscathed. I do feel very fortunate to still be here and still able to practice my craft as a journalist and try to use that to bring attention to these kinds of issues. Literally, every person, and certainly every African-American person that I talked to in New Orleans after the fact about this, had direct personal experience with gun violence, either in their own person or their own family or close circle of friends. When you see, as an outsider as I am, just how pervasive that problem is in the city of New Orleans, it just shows how far there still is to go in dealing with this problem.
Mark, thank you so much for sharing your story with us.
It was my pleasure.
Journalist and author Mark Hertzgard. His latest book is called Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. I was at Jazz Fest when he asked Mayor Mitch Landrieu about the case against the brothers arrested in the Mother's Day shooting. Landrieu said, "I'm sorry you were shot. That was a catastrophic day for the city." And the mayor noted that since that time, the murder rate has dropped dramatically. He credits that drop in part to the work of the Multi-Agency Gang Task Force, a coalition of city, state, and federal agencies created in 2012. It's been key in the case of the Mother's Day shooting. Instead of pursuing attempted murder charges for only the gunman, the case now involves several more defendants as part of a federal case for racketeering or gang activity. For follow-up on this new approach, I sat down with District Attorney Leon Canizero. I asked for his initial reaction to last year's shooting.
I was offended and shocked, I think as everyone was, when you had an opportunity to see a man on a camera shooting a gun multiple times into a crowd and without really any regard for who would be struck by the bullets. And far too often in the city, we see innocent people, and in many cases, children who are struck by these bullets and who are seriously harmed or in some cases even killed. So it was certainly a very disturbing and upsetting event. And I heard about it because one of my attorneys called me as he had received word from the police about the shooting on that afternoon.
And how has that case then evolved over the past year? There were arrests made, there were some initial charges brought, those charges have changed over time. And then let's talk about how that represents a change in the cooperation between the district attorney's office and other law enforcement agencies.
Well, initially we charged a number of individuals with the offenses of attempt murder, aggravated assault with a firearm. Formal charges were filed in the Criminal District Court in Orleans Parish. As a result of our cooperative effort that we have what we call a multi-agency gang task force. Law enforcement officials at the state level, New Orleans police officers, sheriff's office, district attorneys, sheriffs from other parishes, the neighboring parishes, and we're also sitting with the U.S. Marshals, the FBI, the ATF, the DEA, the Louisiana State Police. They're involved in this. And what we are essentially doing is we are trying to coordinate our efforts pool our resources to go after the violent offenders. And in this particular case, we were going after what we thought was gang activity. Was there certain gang activity involved in the Mother's Day shooting? This was not an isolated incident where someone was interested in going after another individual, but it was groups of one particular gang going after a group from another gang. And as a result, a prosecution which evolved in the state court eventually led to a prosecution in the federal court. That was the better venue to allow for greater consequences. And what we have attempted to do, and we've done so very successfully, is we have used a racketeering statute that exists in the state of Louisiana, a statute that has been on the books since 1985, but has never been used in the state. In fact, we've just used it about five or six times in the last 3 years to bring groups of individuals and charge them with a pattern of criminal activity. And it has allowed our efforts to be more successful, taking groups of 10 and 15, in some cases as many as 20 people off the streets. We're seeing that the incidence of violent activity has decreased.
I think it's interesting because I remember reading that gang charges were being sought in the Mother's Day shooting case, and reading the detail that gang activity can be defined as three people or more working in concert to commit crimes. And that seemed to be very different than what I think most people in the general public would think of as gang activity.
What essentially the racketeering statute does provide is it gives the jury an opportunity to know the entire story. Rather than just go into court with one particular murder or one particular armed robbery or one particular narcotic sale, what we get to do is we get to combine that entire amount of activity. We allow the jury to know not only about the homicide that occurred, but sitting at the table next to the person who's responsible for committing the homicide may be the person who was responsible for stealing a car or breaking into a car and stealing a gun. The gun that was given to the person who did in fact commit the homicide. So he's sitting there, he's charged with being a racketeer or a part of a gang, and as a result of that, we see that the legislature has allowed for increased penalties. A person can be penalized or sentenced to up to 50 years at hard labor if he is found guilty of being involved as a racketeer, if he violates the racketeering statute. And we're going to continue to use it because of our ability to take large numbers of people off the street at one time, and it also allows the jury to know the entire story.
I know that the conviction rate for the district attorney's office is up. How does a higher conviction rate feed back into police work?
I think it's fair to say that 5 years ago, when we first came into this office, it seemed to me that the DA's office and the police department were at odds, always a differing opinion, so to speak, about the cases and the way they were handled. The percentage of cases that were accepted by the DA's office by my predecessors was about 50% of the cases. Quite frankly, we thought that was unacceptable. I believe that the police were better than that. I did not believe that 50% of the people they were arresting deserved an opportunity to have their case just totally dismissed without ever going to court. And to that end, we sat and met with the police department. We told them, we want to be in a position where we accept a larger number of your cases. Rather than just review a police report and say, this report isn't good enough, we're going to refuse the case, we'd sit down with the officer, we'd bring him in, tell him that if we have this witness or we have that evidence, this is a case that can be accepted. And lo and behold, the officers were responding, and they were responding in a positive way. We see that we are doing a better job, and again, we don't want the criminals to hold the public hostage. We want to be in a position where the criminals are the ones on the run. We attempt to offer people an opportunity to go another way, and if they opt not to do that, then law enforcement is going to be there to arrest them, take them off the streets, and hopefully successfully prosecute them.
Leon Canizzaro, District Attorney for the City of New Orleans, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
The gang task force means crime is treated differently in court, but violence, of course, leaves its mark on the community long after sentencing the guilty. Our WWNO Listening Post project this week posed questions about the Mother's Day shooting and overall effects of violence. Producer Jesse Hardman sat down to talk about the responses gathered from our mobile recording stations and text messaging service and the community leaders he sought out for more insight.
So we take some of the perspectives we get back from the community, and then we bring them to people who have more of a history maybe with that specific topic. And so this week, we gathered some audio at our listening post locations at the Keller Library and the Norman Mayer Library in Gentilly. And we took some of that audio and also some of the text messages that people send us. We send out a question every week. We took them over to Elysian Fields, to the 7th Ward, to talk to Edward Buckner, who's the director and president of the original Big Seven Social Aid and Pleasure Club.
And that's, of course, the club that hosted the parade where the shooting happened on Mother's Day last year. They were getting ready for their parade, which happened Sunday, and thankfully that parade was incident-free. You talked to Edward right before the second line started on Sunday. What did he have to say?
His big message was just that he's got faith in his community. He has faith that what happened last year had nothing to do with the activity that they were about to engage in.
Right, and here's some of what Edward Buckner had to say.
This is America, and I tell people all the time, we have a right to gather. Things are going to happen. Things happen at the Boston Marathon. Things that happened at the Olympics before. Things that happened all over the world. You just name it. They have had shootings. So we not the first rodeo of a shooting that the world has seen. You know, the thing is this here. If I and my club members and all the other divisions of our club allow some people to stop what we're doing and we've been working on for years, we're crazy.
He also said in the past year, things have been kind of hard. Some of the group members who experienced the shooting have sought out counseling to help them. But he felt like a year later, people were really ready to reclaim their parade route. And they were even going to go past the same spot where the shooting had happened. And he said instead of taking a somber tone when they hit that intersection, they were going to speed things up. They were going to rejoice even more. So I thought that was an interesting reaction. And that flies a little bit in the face of a lot of what I heard back from when people participate in our project. So we have some audio here from a former math teacher in the New Orleans school system who's experienced gun violence through the loss of some of her students. And, you know, she felt very passionate about sharing her own experience.
Let's hear from that teacher. Her name's Maria.
It's really hard for me to talk about gun violence in New Orleans as a former teacher and having lost, up to six of my former students. It's really hard for me to pinpoint what the issues are or what may have caused, you know, a certain incident to occur since there are so many factors. But, you know, my family lives in Chicago and they have their own set of issues, but they actually fear my safety and my family's safety living here in New Orleans. So honestly, there's not one blanket statement I would say about gun violence in New Orleans.
And Maria also said that she no longer takes her family to second lines, that it's not a place where she feels safe going and bringing the people, you know, she loves most. We got a lot of interesting anecdotal text messages from people. And again, to join this project and to share thoughts every week on different topics, all you have to do is text us the word hello to the number 504-224-5314. And so this week, I'm just going to read a few of the many comments we got. And I will say the bulk of them were people who were expressing kind of a bunker mentality. I'd say about 80-90% of the people had some element of they no longer feel safe. I've only been to one second line in the 2 years I've been in New Orleans. I avoid them because of the random shootings that occur. Gun violence in the city is turning me into a hermit. I hate to leave home because you never know what to expect. Here's another thought. I'm a white guy who lives in a mixed neighborhood. I'm friendly with everybody in my area. I always think about how the young guys in my neighborhood have to fear the possibility of gun violence, but I don't largely because I'm white. About a month ago, four guys my age got shot in a drive-by. Nobody died, but it didn't even make the news. I know because I reported it.
As we heard in the interview with the district attorney, that issue of bystanders getting hit is something law enforcement in general feel really strongly about.
Yeah. Well, and the last note I wanted to share is actually somebody who was at the Mother's Day second line last year, and she says, "I've never avoided a second line or parade despite being in the Mother's Day shooting and lying on the ground as people around me were shot. I guess I'm nervous or more jumpy, but feel like second lines are about love and community, and violence shouldn't trump that." And that's the other big message we heard from people, that they're scared, but they also don't want to give up their neighborhoods. So we'll see what happens.
That's Jesse Hardman, producer for WWNO's Listening Post. Last year, as a response to the Mother's Day shooting, WWNO worked with arts and culture website NOLA V to curate a series called Voices on Violence. One of those voices was Valerie West, a member of the original Lady Buckjumpers Social Aid and Pleasure Club. She talked about her culture and how it helped her heal from the violent death of her own son.
My name is Valerie West. I am a native of New Orleans. I've been here all my life. I am 44 years old. I work at Auctioner doing housekeeping. I've been there for the last 7 years. I'm involved in a social and pleasure club, the original Lady Buckjumpers. That's my fun. I listen to the band every Wednesday, Thursday, Sunday. I'm at a second line. That's my fun. I am a victim of a violent crime. My son was killed Easter Sunday 2 years ago. And I went to the Pigeontown Steppers. They host the annual Easter Second Line. And then I enjoyed myself that day, went home. And maybe about 10 o'clock, I got a call stating that, you know, my son had got shot at a local daiquiri shop. So I made it to the scene maybe in about 10 minutes, and my child was pronounced dead. It's like watching a movie. I can replay this in my mind every day. And the hurt, it doesn't get any better. They've had this beef going on since I was a little girl. I was maybe 10 years old when the first killing started. And it's just been going on back and forth with retaliation killings. To the young people who are doing it, you have no idea what state you put a family in with the hurt, the grief, the pain, the anger, based upon what? You mad at a person, you can't get life back once it's taken from you. My child was 22-year-old, never been arrested, was in ITT Tech in an engineering program. There's no stereotype of who this crime can happen to. It's just randomly out there from the gangsters to just choose the chapter of your life and change it. The risk of living in New Orleans, to some, it's not worth it. I'm deeply rooted in my culture, which is second line, and it is a great sisterhood that makes it worth it for me. The decisions I make in my life based on my personal safety is I believe in a higher calling, so I trust and believe that, you know, there's nothing that I can do to make me safe. I can't stay inside because it's violent. I mean, we have had cases where the bullets have come through houses, so I mean, I just go about my life, basically.
You can find Valerie West's words and the rest of this program at WWNO.org. That's all for our show this week. Thanks for joining us, as always, in conversation about what's most important and interesting around the city. I'm your guest host, Eve Troe, and Jack Hopke is back next week for All Things New Orleans.